All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday coming up. Get your requests ready to go. We got all of our regular Friday features coming up as well. Phone number is 312-981-7200. And coming up here, I'm going to introduce Rod Pyle. He's an award-winning author, a columnist, and a speaker on space. If you have any space questions or observations or anything space-related that you would like to talk to Rod about, phone lines and text lines are open. Get him in now at 312-981-7200. And Rod Pyle is now also the editor of Ad Astra Magazine. It's a publication of the National Space Society. And you can check out his website at rodpylebooks.com. That's P-Y-L-E, rodpylebooks.com. Let's welcome Rob back to the show. Hi, Rod.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm good. I just lost your video feed. You were wearing a clean hat just for me. And looks like you put it over the lens.
Yeah, no. I'm not crazy about that camera angle. So
it's a weird angle. Yeah, that's the back of your head. That's like a security camera.
If they changed the angle. To a different angle, I would put it back on, but I'm not crazy about that angle.
Well, this way they can see who comes in and robs the liquor store.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, well, welcome back to the show, Rod.
Thank you. I was very excited there to see you.
All right. So, give everybody your background on how you got into it. We've heard the story here before, but for people who have never heard you before, you became a space nut very early on.
I did. I was born the dawn of the space age, actually a little tiny bit before the dawn of the space age, so before 1958, and grew up with the Gemini and Apollo programs and was a convert. You know, everybody else was watching guys shoot hoops and smack baseballs and stuff. I was staying home, curled up in front of a couple of TVs, pretending I was in Mission Control watching the Apollo moon landings, which was incredibly cool.
Yeah.
And did some schooling in astronomy and science and so forth, and ended up becoming a space writer, and it's been almost as much fun as radio, I think.
Well, we always have fun when you come on the show. We always have a lot to talk about, and you've written a bunch of really terrific books. We've talked about those in the past. And tell us about Ad Astra Magazine, of which you are now the editor.
It's been coming out since, I think, the mid-80s. I've only been doing it for about a year. It's had a series of really fine editors going back to its founding. But it's a quarterly magazine. It's about 80 pages. It's in print and digital. Not a lot of smaller associations like the NSS are doing print anymore, so it's unusual that we're still able to put this thing out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just a really great, it's fun, and, you know, the stories are sharp, and we get a lot of good features about, you know, since we're a quarterly, we're not going to be doing week-to-week news items like space.com or something, but I've been working to bring in more writers from places like space.com and Air and Space and some of the other magazines just to try and up our game a notch. And so it's really fun, and we're putting a real emphasis on storytelling. Now, right now, you have to join the National Space Society to get the magazine, but we're starting to roll out to newsstands, so hopefully it'll be one somewhere near you soon.
Okay. That's great. So that's Ed. Yeah. Are you having fun editing that?
I am. You know, I've worked for magazines quite a bit in the past, but I had never edited one before, so this was a bit of an experiment on both sides.
Yeah.
But it's been great, and you know, because I've been in it so long, that part makes it really easy. So it's just, you got to pull out your spell checker every now and then, but that's okay.
All right, well, cool. I'm glad you're having a good time.
What computer's for, man. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. That's right. That's right. So I guess the first story we have to talk about is Donald Trump directing the Pentagon to actually create this military Space Force, of which Space Force, of which, you know, has been great fodder for the late night hosts, you know, to talk about.
Yeah.
They've been having a lot of fun with it, and it, as crazy as it may sound, it's grounded in some legitimacy, correct?
It is. Excuse me. It is. And what a lot of people don't know is that there's already more money spent on military space than NASA spends as it is. So NASA's got a $19 billion budget. Military has about a $22 billion budget that we know of. That's the open book part. Black budget is.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of money being spent there already. Most of it's going through the Air Force. So the debate that's been going on for a few years now, I mean, the Air Force has wanted a piece of space since the 50s. They were planning since way back when. They've written about this a lot, you know, bases on the moon and orbital fighters and all this kind of stuff. They had a shuttle that they were going to build in the late 50s, early 60s called Dinosaur, D-Y-N-A, S-O-A-R, not dinosaur,
right,
R-E-U.
Right.
And so, you know, they were looking at this for a long time, but they were never able to get enough money to make it happen in terms of sending pilots up there, which, you know, if you're in the Air Force, what are you in the Air Force for? Fly planes and shoot down bad guys. So that was something that was kind of a sore point for a long time. Got out of that in the late 70s and 80s and 90s and just went on doing what they do best, which is defensive and spy satellites and so forth, along with the National Reconnaissance Office and a bunch of other organizations, a bunch of other alphabet soup guys. And so this conversation has been coming up, though, because the Chinese and the Russians are very aggressively, we think, developing space interdiction capabilities that include shooting down enemy satellites, blinding any enemy satellites with lasers and other energy weapons and things like that. And there's this general consensus that we're kind of falling behind, even though we've got pretty good technology. So the question was, do you give it to the Air Force or do you form yet another branch like the Marine Corps? So this decision, which came in Trump's Space Directive number 3, was, okay, they're going to be their own thing. So what isn't answered yet is, A, entirely what they're going to do, and B, is that money coming out of the Air Force's budget, the general defense budget, or what? And that's going to be a hard-fought battle, I think.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You know, a lot of people, you know, because we talked about this briefly before, you know, when Trump mentioned the Space Force before. And, you know, the stuff that you're telling us about now is very informative. And, you know, I mean, you know, Trump is not the most subtle guy in the world.
And, you're so kind.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the most subtle guy in the world, and sometimes he comes off as not the smartest dude in the world either. So when he presents this and starts screaming about Space Force and we're going to have another force, it's going to be a Space Force, and you know, and he hits his bullet point words, it sometimes it comes off as like, well, this guy's nuts, but. Like you said, there is legitimacy in this, in a very strong way. I mean, it is competitive out there in space.
It is, and we stand to lose a lot. I mean, satellites at this point and orbital infrastructure. I mean, every ATM transaction you do, every banking transaction, agriculture, the shipping of goods by trucks and railroad. And you name it, at this point, it's involving some kind of orbital infrastructure, and that's just civilian stuff. And you get into military things, like troop movements and battle planning and so forth, it's absolutely critical. So it's a very big deal. Now, one thing that I've wondered about, and I haven't read anything about it, so it's a pure conjecture, but you got guys like Elon Musk planning to put up 1,500 to mid-2000s small satellites in the next handful of years for broadband, and other companies putting up small satellites. And these are all low Earth orbit, so they're going overhead every 90 minutes or so. And these big networks, well, if those end up having some kind of sensing capability, now you really got something. You'd have to knock down most of them to really put the appreciable dent in the infrastructure. So it's an interesting idea. I don't know if anything's happening along those lines, but it's an interesting idea. One thing that has been made clear. Yeah.
Okay, Rod, hang on, Rod. I'm sorry, we have to hit the news, but hang on to that thought, and we'll jump right back into it, okay? Hold on a second. There's Rod Pyle, everybody, and he is a space expert and an award-winning author, and we'll get back to him to talk space. If you have questions or comments, 312-981-7200. The news is coming up in a couple minutes. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? It's Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday will be coming up. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy. All the regular Friday features are all coming up. Got a lot of other fun and interesting topics to talk about as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And a little bit later on, your Fly Jam requests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let's get back to our conversation. Rod Pyle is our guest, an award-winning author, columnist, and a speaker on space. He's now the editor of Ad Astra magazine. He's written a bunch of really terrific books involving space. RodPyleBooks.com is his website, or NSS.org for more information. And we were talking about the directive to create the military space force that Trump announced a couple of times. And we were getting into some of the details about that. Rod, I interrupted you before the news. Let's jump back into what you were talking about.
Yeah, sorry, I get carried away.
No.
I was just going to say, you know, this engenders visions of guys flying around as space fighters, and that is apparently part of the conversation, but it's not clear how much of it's going to be robotic and how much is going to be with crews aboard.
Right.
And there's so much work happening on the AI side. You and I have talked about that. I work up at JPL part-time. There's a ton of work happening up there. It's getting to the point where there's a lot of stuff they do as well or better than people. So I think an awful lot of this is going to be robotic. And the Air Force already has a little mini shuttle, you may have seen, the X-37 that they fly kind of quietly. It goes up on a Atlas rocket and does its thing and stays up there for months or over a year if they want to. And it's got a cargo bay, so you can put whatever you want in there. So they've got a kind of an interesting capability already. I mean, that thing could go suck up satellites if it wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting question. What was kind of weird about it was I was reading a couple of write-ups by people who were there at the event. And they said that, you know, they thought Trump was going to talk primarily about orbital debris mitigation because we've got all this stuff banging around up there that's dangerous for satellites and spacecraft. And then he turned to a guy named General Dunford, who was in the VIP area, I guess, and started talking about Space Force. And at least according to a couple of the people writing about it, they said Dunford looked kind of surprised and said, "Yes, sir, absolutely." And, you know, the conversation turned towards we want to prevent an orbital Pearl Harbor and that kind of thing. But I'm not sure people really knew what was happening, so it kind of speaks to what you said earlier about some of this kind of comes off the cuff, or at least appears to anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and, you know, it's interesting because when people watch, you know, speeches that Trump gives, you can always tell when he goes off prompter. There's no question about it. He can always go, well, he's
looks everywhere, right?
Clearly he's speaking off the cuff right now. And so I think a little bit of that happened, you know, during that announcement. But I mean, it's an interesting idea. And, you know, and I mean, there are reasons for a variation of this, whatever Space Force turns out to be, to be implemented.
Yeah, there are really good reasons, and the Chinese and I think the Russians as well have been developing these high-altitude hypersonic weapons that can come in at many times the speed of sound, and currently, as far as I know, we don't have a lot of defense against that. So there's a lot of things to be worried about, but primarily with the satellite infrastructure. So it's just a question of, you know, then you stand back to the macro view. Well, we've still got this space treaty from 1967 that the Russians have signed and many other nations have signed, lots of them, that basically says you won't militarize space, but it's more talking about weapons of mass destruction than it is in individual units that can do things of the kind we've been talking about.
Yeah.
So how that's going to be interpreted and or applied is going to be an interesting conversation. There are people that feel that this is kind of ratcheting up the stakes a little bit in a way that may not turn out to be good, but we'll see. You know, it's going to happen one way or the other.
Right. Okay. Interesting stuff. Rod, so tell us about the International Space Development Conference. You mentioned it the last time that you were with us, and you attended and the ISDC, yeah. And you said it was the best one yet.
It was. You know, we got, I think, 1,300, 1,400 people, but 500 of them were kids from mostly overseas. So it's nice to see a lot of young people there and a lot of different kinds of faces. And it's really a place where people can come without a lot of background in this. It's not a technical conference, although there are technical tracks in it. But you can come without a lot of background and really learn a lot. And one of our premier speakers this year was Jeff Bezos,
yeah,
which we were very excited about because he's... His general look toward space is the same as the National Space Society's, which is, you know, over the decades, millions of people living and working in space and doing things and moving humanity off this planet. And that was his message. But before he started talking, so this was at a dinner ceremony. We were giving him this prestigious award that we give out every few years.
Yeah.
And he said, before I start my interview, he's doing this fireside chat format interview, he said, I know the cast of The Expanse is in this audience. And so, you know, they stood up and everybody cheered because people love the show The Expanse.
Right.
And it's a Sci-Fi Network show. It had been canceled a few weeks before and it looked like things weren't going well. There's talk about maybe Amazon would pick it up, but nobody knew. So he said, I wasn't sure a half an hour ago. You know, one of our guys, a guy named Dave Gressler, had engineered the Expanse cast meeting Bezos before he went on stage, which is kind of neat. So they got to talk, and he's a big fan of the show. But he got up on stage and said, about 10 minutes ago, I got a phone call, and I'm buying your show. And the place just went nuts. So that was cool for a couple of reasons. One, it was just really neat to be there, and the other was it got us a whole lot more press coverage we would have gotten.
There you go.
You know, I mean, you got to think of these things.
Yeah. Now, do you enjoy Expanse?
I love it. You know, I people have been telling me about it, and I watched the first season, and it was kind of a, you know, gumshoe detective on a colony out in the asteroid belt, a little bit like Outland, if you remember that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but it wasn't really sticking to me. And then the second and third seasons, they turned more towards deep space and this big mystery about this proto molecule that appears to be dangerous to humanity, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's three different groups. There's kind of a strained Cold War going on. And it got really interesting. What's so much fun about the show, if you're into this stuff, is they really go through pains to make it as technically accurate as possible. So even though they still have push-button gravity, when they switch it off, they got to wear magnetic boots. And when the ships are halfway to where they're going to go in space, they got to turn around and fire the other direction to slow down. So they really do keep an eye on physics, and it's very cool. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And I know you're always thrilled when you can spot things that are at least based in reality when you're watching sci-fi space stuff.
Yeah, like the Interstellar, my favorite movie.
Let's not get into that right now.
Okay.
What else did Bezos say? You know, during his speech, other than the Expanse, he bought the Expanse. What else did he? What was he focusing on?
He's talked a lot about his bigger vision. You know, he in his valedictorian speech, which I think was in 1982, when he graduated high school, he started talking about his aim towards moving humanity into space. And not so much colonizing other planets like Elon Musk wants to do, but about having people living and working off our planet, with the big idea being you move heavy industry and things that are resource extensive and so forth off the planet. There's many more times the amount of resources in space that we have on Earth. That includes water and metal and rare earth elements and all these kinds of things, and the asteroids and the moon and other bodies. So it makes sense to move heavy industry off of Earth, which is what he's talking about, and really leave Earth to recover and become this pristine park where people can live and do their thing.
Yeah.
And for the people that it makes sense to be out in space, or who want to be out in space doing things out there, to do that in large numbers. But we've got to get started, and that's one of the big reasons he started his rocket company. And the guy sells $1 billion per year of his stock, which he can do for a really long time, longer than any of us will live because he's very wealthy, to fund his rocket company. So it's really exciting to hear him talk about it because he's really putting his money where his heart is, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, these guys, Musk and this guy, it's really, really nice to have these guys around. And I'm sure you guys, I'm sure you love both of these guys because they are, like you said, they're putting their money where their heart is.
They are. And this is really, I think I may have mentioned this before, but you know, a year ago, if I was giving a talk, I give talks every couple of months to groups large and small, often young people, not always. And I would say, you know, I'm so excited. We've got a new space age coming. All these things are going to happen. But in the last year or so, with the flight of the Falcon Heavy by SpaceX and the things that Jeff Bezos is committing to, he's also building a lunar lander to deliver cargo to the moon and bring back supplies to the moon, or at least considering doing that. That new space age is here, and it's a competition. You know, it's not just NASA. We're not waiting for NASA to figure out what it can afford to do when Congress makes up its mind. This is a couple of private companies, big ones, with hundreds of smaller ones, all competing for the same workspace, and where there's competition, there's usually price reduction and speed and excellence, and that's really what we're looking for, is how to make this stuff, A, affordable, and B, turn a profit, and that's what gets so exciting, because now it looks like it's happening, and that's something a lot of us have been waiting for since we were kids, because I was promised in the late 60s when Apollo was going that we were going to be on Mars in the 80s, and it didn't happen. I'm still a little bent about that.
You're still waiting on that one. So,
yeah,
I'm still waiting on flying cars, Rod. I got to tell you.
Well, there's a lot of prototypes out there. I'm sure you see them on YouTube every now and then.
I do. Yeah, I have.
Always work great. You know, the ones I like are the ones that go straight up and then can translate horizontally and forward and back. If they got to have a runway to lift off, that's a little spooky.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
The way people drive around me in L.A., I don't want them flying.
Hey, well, that's
really
the thing.
Bad.
I was just going to say, it's bad enough driving on roads, you know, let alone, you know, there's so many idiots out driving on roads. I can't imagine them driving in the sky. That would be just really...
Can you imagine texting when you're flying and you've got three dimensions to screw up? I mean, that would be really bad.
Yeah, that would be terrible. All right, Rod, hang on, okay?
You bet.
All right, Rod Pyle is with us, award-winning author, columnist, and a expert on the world of space. And he is the editor of Ad Astra Magazine. He's written a lot of really great books. Check out rodpylebooks.com. We'll talk more. And if you want to jump in here with any questions or comments about space, it's 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18th floor at 303 East Wacker, our new digs. Having a great time here. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features will be coming up. Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spy, and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Rod Pyle is currently my guest. He's an award-winning author, a columnist, and an expert on space. And he's written some really terrific books on that topic as well. Check out rodpylebooks.com, and we've been talking space stories with Rod. Rod, welcome back.
Hi, and before I forget, happy birthday next week.
Oh, thank you. I won't talk
to you before then, so enjoy your movie, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm gonna go see Mad Max Fury Road for about the 900th time. So,
now, which one is Fury Road? When is that made?
That was the last one in 2015.
That was the last one, okay.
Yeah.
I got so mad after Thunderdome, I have to admit I haven't seen it.
Wait, you haven't seen Fury Road?
No.
Oh, Rod. Oh.
Do I have to go?
Oh. I personally...
Okay, I'm getting on a plane for Chicago next year.
Personally, it's my favorite of all of them, and I know that that's sacrilege. Considering The Road Warrior is like one of the greatest movies ever made, but I think Fury Road surpasses it. It's an astonishing movie.
Oh, well, you sold me now, okay.
You got to see it. Hey, let's talk about this dust storm on Mars and what's going on there and what's going on with the rover.
Poor opportunity, man. So this storm's been going on for a little under a month, and it's not quite global, but it's big. It's about the size of North and South America put together. And the problem with Mars is it never rains, right? I mean, it hasn't rained for billions of years. So it's a dry dust bowl. It doesn't take a whole lot of wind to whip up a lot of very fine-grained, gritty dust. So this stuff gets high up in the atmosphere, especially as Mars gets a little closer to the sun to its orbit, and it heats up and the atmospheric pressure goes up. And it starts flying around because of all these temperature differentials. So Curiosity rover, which is doing fine, it's got a nuclear power supply, so it's still taking selfies and doing its thing and exploring. Opportunity, on the other hand, which is much older, it's been going for 14 years now. It only had the primary mission was 3 months or 9 months, so it's well past its warranty date. But it's got solar panels, so the good thing is that wind keeps blowing dust off the solar panels, so it's been able to go this long. The bad thing is it's high altitude dust blocks out most of the sunlight, so it finally went into hibernation mode, which is where it shuts itself down. So it's a safing process, right? So when your computer goes in safe mode. And it's got little nuclear elements, nuclear pellets inside the case to keep the interior warm, so it's not going to freeze. But if it stays shut off too long and can't get power for too long, if the batteries dip too low, it could damage the batteries and possibly cause a major fault in the computing system. So it's kind of two levels of fault. The worst one is if the clock goes bad, and then it forgets to check in with Mission Control once it wakes up. So we've kind of got our fingers crossed and waiting to see. But they think it'll be okay. They're just not sure.
Yeah. Well, how often do these kind of things happen? These dust storms.
These dust storms happen pretty
regularly, right?
They're seasonal, yeah. So the Martian year is about two Earth years. So they happen every year. We just haven't seen one like this for about a decade and maybe more because it's just huge. And the other problem is because there are no oceans on Mars, these storms start going and they just keep circulating around the planet. They don't land. They don't run into anything. So they just keep going at these high altitudes. And you end up, this happened when Mariner 9 showed up at Mars in 1971. And it arrived at the same time a Russian probe did. The Russian probe had a very basic computer. There's this big windstorm going on downstairs, so it just starts going through its picture sequence and shoots this big orange billiard ball for a few weeks, and then that's the end of the mission. Mariner 9, they were able to reprogram and wait it out, but it took about a month, and that's actually how they discovered the big volcanoes on Mars the first time, was they saw these things that looked almost like pimples poking up through this bland blanket of dust, and they realize, oh my God, those are the tops of volcanoes. They're the largest things in the solar system, way bigger than anything on Earth. So that was kind of a cool moment.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, keeping an eye on what's happening there. Is there anything else about the that you wanted to mention before we let you go about the ISDC for 2018? Was there anything else that you wanted to mention quickly?
2019, we're going to be in D.C., so anybody in the neighborhood ought to come by. It's a great time. It's not very expensive. It's one of the cheapest conferences out there. And I'll be there doing my usual batch of very engaging and entertaining talks, I hope.
And also, you guys will be very happy that the new season of The Expanse will be premiering right around that time.
You bet. Yes, I know I will. I think a lot of people really love the show. It's yeah. done well in the ratings.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, there was something out in space there. I can't even an interstellar visitor.
Oumuamua.
Yeah, Oumuamua. What's going on there? That turned out to be a comet after everybody thought it might be something else?
Well, they thought it might be a comet. When they spotted it, it was already rounding the sun. And this thing's going really, really fast, a couple yeah. 100,000 miles per hour at its fastest. And it was acting like a comet, and then it was acting like a rock, and it was acting like a comet. So they thought, okay, it's a long, slender rock from outside the solar system. That was the general consensus. But as it's been leaving the solar system, it's been speeding up, which it's not supposed to do. It's supposed to stay the same. So now they're thinking something's propelling it. So the general consensus is it's a comet after all, and the ice melting is propelling it along in its trajectory. But, of course, there are other conclusions you can draw that are obvious. So yeah. Who knows?
Where'd the name come from?
There were a couple of names for it. Some people want to name it Rama after Arthur C. Clarke.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure why they named it Oumuamua, but it means messenger or scout in Hawaiian.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
All right. Well, that makes
sense. Now you know a Hawaiian word. Oumuamua.
Well, I knew Keanu Reeves. The only other one
and
that I knew.
I knew Okole, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The only one. Exactly. Hey, were you a reader of Harlan Ellison's work?
Yeah, I was. And of course, we all remember the Star Trek episode that he wrote.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of a sad surprise. How old was he? I didn't see that.
84. He was 84.
Well, okay. So he lived a long time.
He lived a nice life, but he was an extraordinary writer. He really, really was.
He was, and he really earned his oats, and what a guy, you know. So, yeah, that was sad news. Yeah. We're seeing the same thing with the Apollo guys. You know, every couple of years we lose another one, and there aren't that many left.
Have you seen the trailer for First Man?
I have, and you know, you were talking earlier about catching mistakes.
Yeah,
I try not to be too snitty about it because everybody makes mistakes. But in the trailer, he's flying the X-15, and he's going in this upward arc, and it's very exciting. And then I hear the radio call from a shuttle flight about, you know, press to max Q or whatever the radio call is. It's like, no, that's with a space shuttle. That was what they said in the X-15 at that point in the flight. Don't do that.
Right.
But, you know, guys cut a trailer. He needs a sound loop. He puts it in. It makes sense. But it looks like a great movie.
Yeah.
I was a little weirded out by the casting at first, but it looks like he did a really great job.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I think Gosling's a terrific actor. And, you know, the director did Whiplash and he did La La Land, and he's a really smart filmmaker. So I'm positive on it. I'm looking forward to it.
What timing? You know, 50th anniversary is coming up middle of next year. We got the Apollo 8 anniversary coming up in December.
Yeah.
So I hope the thing just breaks all the records there are, so we get to see more of them.
Yeah, makes sense. Rod, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Have a great time. Have a great month, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks. Take care and happy birthday.
Buddy. Take care. Thank you, buddy. Rod Pyle, everybody. Check out rodpylebooks.com. He is a space expert. All right, we'll take a break in the news. We'll be coming up after this.